DW Africa Link.
Kenyans are demanding justice for blogger and teacher Albert Ojwang, who died in police custody under suspicious circumstances. The 33-year-old Ojwang was arrested last Friday, June 6th, in Homa Bay, Western Kenya, and transported over 350 kilometers to Nairobi. Authorities claimed he was detained for allegedly spreading false information about Deputy Inspector General of Police Eliud Lagat on social media. He was found dead in his cell 2 days later at Nairobi's Central Police Station. An autopsy concluded that Ojwang was, quote, brutally murdered while in police custody. This just adds to the frequent incidents of police brutality in the country. So, what really is going on? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Kenyan President William Ruto has condemned the death of blogger and influencer Albert Ojwang, which has sparked demonstrations and widespread outrage across Kenya. Ruto said, quote, "This tragic occurrence at the hands of police is heartbreaking and unacceptable." He urged the police to cooperate fully to facilitate a swift, transparent, and credible investigation so that justice will be served. But will justice be served? For more on this, let me bring in Wanjiru Nderu, an anti-corruption and human rights activist. Also with us is our very own Andrew Waseke. He is DW's correspondent in Nairobi, Kenya, and is following the fallout from the streets and social media. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Africa Link. Wanjiru, you get to go first. Albert Ojwang criticized a senior police officer, and now he's dead. What's going on?
Well, this is the current situation in Kenya right now. It is our reality as we speak. And what is sad is that we probably do not know how many more people have gone through what he has gone through, have been disappeared or killed, because we do not have the capacity as individuals to be able to find out countrywide how many of those cases are there. But with what we see with Albert, the impunity of it, the brazen acts of these officers, they did not think that Kenyans would even either miss him or react to his death the way we have reacted. But this is it. It's become so bad that Kenyans have now turned to a point where back on the street this week in several parts of the country. In fact, in Kenya for the last 1 year, there's been a protest in parts of this country every single day, just that some of them are never reported. So this country is not the same as it was 2-3 years ago. This regime has created such an environment that is so toxic, and we no longer live in fear. And that's the thing, and that's what they don't understand. Kenyans are not afraid anymore. We are seeing people getting killed and people are still going back to the streets and confronting the same police officers who are killing us. We saw that yesterday in Nakuru, where somebody is going towards the police, knowing very well the policeman is aiming to shoot him. And one person died. So I don't even know how to describe. I have never experienced what we are experiencing myself in this country. I have been a human rights defender for a very long time. I've been in protests. I've organized protests. But this is the worst that it has been since the time of the late President Moi in the 90s.
Right. Oof. Andrew, you've been covering this. You've been on the ground. And you've been following how Kenyans have been reacting to the death of the blogger. Tell me more about how Kenyans are reacting.
Thank you very much, Eddie. The reaction in Kenya was instant. People were shocked, but also really angry. And because this was not just another name in the news, Albert Ojwang had a voice. He had a voice online, unlike other young people who have been killed for the same. You remember last year during the finance bill protest, and people knew him for calling out powerful figure. So when word spread that he had died in police custody after criticizing the senior police officer, the DIG, it felt personal to many. And you asked about the reaction. Activists and Kenyans from all walks of life hit the streets. And of course, the police responded the only way they seem to know, that is with tear gas. And online, especially on X, that is Twitter, and TikTok, the story has exploded. Young people especially were not having it. They were saying that if this can happen to him, it can happen to any of us. You could feel the fear, but also sort of a growing defiance, because it is still the number one story trending in Kenya right now.
The Independent Police and Oversight Authority, IPOA, is investigating the matter. From what you're saying, you don't trust at all that real justice will come out from this internal probe?
No, not at all. They're just going to do their usual. In fact, I've seen that they have been given 7 days to give a report by the ODPP, and that is the prosecution, figureheads of this of our justice system. And they have told them they've given them 7 days, and they need to know who did whatever happened to our brother, you know. But what we know for sure, that Eliud, the DIG, will likely not face justice. And they're going to take the people who were sent there. And this is what our police don't learn. You're always the ones who bear the brunt of these things. If you look historically at all the police people who have been used to do some of these atrocities, not only do some of them end up dead, they are the ones who end up in prison. And all they were doing is following orders. And the people who give them these orders never face justice. So we are not expecting any justice at all. Not at all.
So just to be clear, the allegation is that, you keep saying that DIG, for those listening that may be a bit confused, that's the Deputy Inspector General. So you're basically saying that the allegation is that the Deputy Inspector General of Kenya is to be blamed for the death.
Yes. Everything points to him. In fact, in the press conference, they admitted Kanja, his boss, the Inspector General himself of police, admitted that he was, quote-unquote, arrested after a complaint by his deputy. So they themselves are admitting that the order was given by the deputy. Now, let us even just take a step back. I want us to imagine what could have happened here. This man ordered his junior officers to track this young man who actually lives in Mombasa. Mombasa is like 500 kilometers from Nairobi. He came and went to his home, which is 350 kilometers from Nairobi, in the opposite direction, to spend time with his family. That is where he was picked from. They put together resources, which is our resources, to go and pick up this young man from his father's house as they were having lunch, drove him to Nairobi, back to Nairobi, where they tortured and murdered him. So that is how serious this is. And they are admitting themselves, this is not speculation, they have said it themselves openly in public, that yes, the orders to arrest this young man, who later ended up dead, came from the DIG himself.
Wanjeri, this death comes just as Kenyans prepare to mark a year since the June 2024 Gen Z anti-government protest. That also is a situation where police left bodies in the streets. What does this really say? Just a year ago, even more people died at the hands of police, and now we're talking about another allegation that a deputy inspector general has killed another citizen. What does that really say?
It shows us that these people have gotten to a point where their arrogance has gotten to their heads so much that they do not envision a scenario where Kenyans can collectively turn against them. The power has gotten to their head so much, they feel they can kill, abduct, disappear anybody they want, and there is nothing we can do about it. So they did not, I can assure you, anticipate our reaction. They did not. They thought they'll kill our Albert and we are going to just move on. But see what has happened countrywide. It has shaken them. They may pretend in their cozy offices and with their bodyguards around them that everything is fine. But that power that has gotten to their head is going to be their downfall. I am telling you where we are headed as Kenyans, and from the way I'm reading the mood of the nation, these people are not in a very good space. The killings need to stop, and they think killing us is going to put us in a space of fear. But in fact, if you see what is happening, it is emboldening people. I'll give you two examples. When the body was confirmed to be at the city mortuary, the public went there and shut down traffic, okay? They even ended up inside the mortuary and took photos and sang the national anthem over his body. That's how passionate Kenyans are about what has happened to this young man. And as this was happening, there was a police officer on the scene who was taking photos of the protesters. And what they do is they take our photos and then later use them to target us because, you know, that's how they identify who was on the streets. And he was in plain clothes. But somehow, I don't know whether it is a divine moment or something, Kenyans realized that this is not a protester. This must be a policeman. And they did a citizen's arrest of this man, forced him to identify himself by name, by rank number, and the police station he comes from. That is one example. Same yesterday, we have a politician who comes from the general region. And you know, Kenya is a very quote-unquote tribal-based politics space. Mm. So this woman comes and she's from where Albert Ojwang comes from, that region. And she comes to the mortuary and tries to address Kenyans. And people refused to be addressed by her. She was literally asked to leave. That's where we are at.
Hmm.
So this impunity that they're moving with and they're living under, and this power that they think is going to give them the protection from the people. When the people revolt, even those policemen that are around them with guns will not protect them. And I'll give you something else that happened last year. During the protests, I was in the street myself with my daughter and, you know, the rest of the young people. We were supporting them. And what I realized is that some of the policemen that were on the ground who were beating us up were not even Kenyans. I could tell, even other protesters around us could tell, that some of them are from Uganda because the accent is very clear. The Ugandan accent is very clear. And we could tell that they had been shipped in to come and deal with us. Our police force is not big enough to handle 50 million of us. So that's what they need to understand. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, a lot of these obviously have to be looked into to be proven. But it is no doubt still bizarre, to say the least, to hear what's going on the ground. And Andrew, in last year, 2024, during the protest, you covered it. What does Ojwang's death stare in that context? Are we looking at another boiling point that will take even more people onto the streets, which unfortunately in 2024 led to even more civilians dying? What do you see here?
Honestly, Eddie, it feels like deja vu for me, like we are heading right back to where we were last year in June 2024. You remember that was when young people took to the streets over the finance bill, and the response was very brutal. Dozens were killed, others disappeared. Up to this day, some people are still disappeared. Now, fast forward 1 year later, and here we are again. Another young person is dead after confronting authority. It's like nothing has changed. So to answer you, yes, Ojwang's death is triggering all those emotions again. People are remembering the pain, the fear, and the anger from last year. And most people are actually asking whether is the government still listening at all. Yesterday I was listening to security analysts speaking, and some were saying we could very easily see people back in the streets. And this time it might not be just about one case. It could sort of open up all those unresolved wounds from last year.
For me, I mean, again, you've been speaking to analysts and all. You know, Kenya is one of those countries that you'd say are pretty strong when it comes to democracy, right? And yet, Ojwang's death seems to fit a pattern. Young, critical voices somehow disappearing or dying, in most cases in state custody. What do you think is happening, Andrew, in a country that claims to uphold democracy?
That's exactly the problem. That's right there. On paper, we are a democracy. This is exactly what Wanjiri was saying. On paper, we are a democracy. We have elections. We have a constitution that guarantees certain freedoms, such as freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and all that. But in practice, we keep seeing these patterns. Bloggers, activists, young voices, anyone who's too outspoken suddenly finds themselves targeted, even if you're a comedian. And in Ojwang's case, it was so clear. He criticized a senior police officer on social media, and days later, he's dead in a cell. That's not what democracy looks like. That's fear. And when a country starts punishing citizens for speaking truth to power, then we have to question what kind of democracy we are really living in. So I would not say that Kenya has the same democracy as other countries, let's say in Europe or in the Americas. I will not say that at all. Our democracy is not genuine. It's just there on paper, but it's not genuine.
I mean, Wanjiri, what does this really say about the system? I mean, we've seen tear gas lobbed at peaceful protesters demanding justice for Ojwang, for instance. And, you know, typically many protests in Kenya is like that. It starts peaceful. Police, you know, start throwing tear gas or, you know, manhandling protesters. Why does the Kenyan state keep meeting peaceful voices with violence? And really, what does it say about the system?
Okay. You know, I don't know if you've had a dog as a pet. There are ways when you startle a dog before it, when the fear checks in, the first reaction they usually get is either to attack or to take off. Now, these people are behaving worse than dogs. To be very honest, their idea of clamping down on dissent by killing people or by lobbing tear gas and things like that is actually making things worse for them. Okay. And just maybe if I can go back to what Andrew was saying, yes, we are a democracy on paper, but that paper has also given Kenyans the power using our constitution to do the things that we are doing. And that is not something that they want. Our constitution gives us all these freedoms, and we have all these nice things said about them. When we pick one or two of those and act on them, it scares them, it terrifies them. And unfortunately for them, instead of taking a step back and asking themselves, how do we engage people? How do we change what we are doing? Because the only thing we have asked them to do, really, since they got into power, was do your jobs. But all they're doing is stealing from us. Openly flaunting their helicopters and money on tables and their watches and their Louboutin red bottomed shoes on social media, you know, and doing even things like videos, dancing around property, saying and telling us, see what God has done for us. When they're doing that, our hospitals have no drugs. Just actually to this week, I think, they reported that the drugs that we have in our hospitals are expired. Our education system has crumbled. In fact, the national exams that are supposed to be done this year, they're saying that they might not happen because there is no money for printing the exam papers. That has never happened because they're stealing everything. They're grabbing everything. It is so, I don't even know how to put it in context. For it, it's like almost they're going into our central banks and carrying out the money in sacks and doing nothing at the same time. You know, if you want to hoodwink a people, show them that you're working. Pretend to be working. Let us see something good here, something good there. That's not happening. They simply do not care what we think about them as long as they're buying their mansions and they have all these helicopters in private hangars at Wilson Airport. In fact, they just went into government specifically to enrich themselves, and they're not hiding it from us. So when we get angry, how do they react? By killing us, by using police. To, you know, this policeman, and you know, I have some of them who are my friends, and we talk about what happens when they're given such orders. And they say, we do not have a choice. There's a policeman right now, very, very popular in Kenya. His name is Samido. He's also a musician, very, very popular. And because he chanted one term You know, the crowd is the one that dictates how the performer, you know, if you've been to a concert, you find that at times that the crowd takes control of the performance. And the crowd were chanting to him one time, one time, one time, which is what is happening in Kenya now, where people are saying President Ruto is a one-term president. He's going to be the first one-term president. Mm. And he asked the crowd, oh, so we are saying one term. And he just chanted one term and the clip went viral. So what do they do? They take him and transfer him to the anti-stock theft unit and send him miles and miles and miles away from Nairobi or from wherever he was stationed. And that is how they punish policemen. So they send him to very semi-arid, remote areas where you can barely survive. So he hasn't reported as of yesterday for 10 days. And Kenyans may have missed this because I've not seen it. It should have been trending, actually, because of how popular he is. And now the police have issued an arrest warrant for him for not going to work 10 days after he was supposed to report, and they have stopped his salary.
Huh. So what happens now? I mean, Kenyans want justice for the death of the blogger, Albert Ojwang, who died in police custody. What can we expect in the coming days? How can justice be gotten? And do you believe justice will come even? Wanjeri?
No, to be very honest, no. And that is where the pain is, that there's a family out there that, yes, we have them and we have them in our prayers and we don't know how to, we can't bring their son back. But Kenyans do not expect justice. We don't expect justice. As especially me as a mother who has a 21-year-old who actually had to go into hiding for a few weeks this year because of her involvement in the protests and all that. It is sad when you see them coming after our children. And this boy was the only child of that man. Only child. And he was giving his story about how he has raised him so painfully, working in mines for more than 20 years. And when this young man has gotten a job, he's just started a family. He has a child who's only barely 2 years old. And then you kill him over a social media post. We are not expecting justice. But maybe I can just maybe read just the last line of what this statement from Maraga is so powerful. Presidential candidate Maraga. And he said, we now demand the regime shuts down, makes way for a reset to the rule of law and accountability, a restoration to the values respecting human life, and a rebuilding of our nation's institutions that now point towards state failure. That's the only solution. There is nothing else.
Right. What do you mean by total shutdown? How likely?
The resignation of everybody from the president all the way down to his minions. We need this regime gone. It is now. We can't continue living like this as Kenyans. As much as they can't kill all of us, we can't afford any more bloodshed. We simply can't.
Oh, that's also definitely very dangerous because even more lives will be lost. So seems like there's some sort of a stalemate. Is it not just a case of waiting democratically for the next elections? And, you know, if Kenyans decide to choose a new leader, then that so be it, right? That seems to be the only logical way to go, isn't it?
Well, that should be the ideal, but the way they're moving these people, they literally want us to oust them. The way they're pushing Kenyans and the killings that are still ongoing and the disappearances. Kenyans, as I told you what we've witnessed this week, them confronting the police directly. They're pushing us to a point where we will not care whether if we go to the street, we are going to lose a few more people as long as we remove them. That is, unfortunately, where they're pushing us to. It is sad that lives are being lost, but lives are still being lost when we sit in our homes and tweet. A social media post is going to get you killed.
Thanks for that submission, Wanjeru. Andrew, you have the final words to wrap it up.
I think we are at crossroads. On one hand, yes, there's a real risk that this could spill over into public unrest, especially with the 1 year anniversary of the June protests just around the corner. I think it was June 25, yeah. Emotions are still raw from that year, but I also think that there's a shift happening. Civil society, if you see how Kenyans have improved from last year, civil society is getting louder, more organized and more coordinated and also bold. So people are not tired of hashtags. They want laws to change. They want the police to be held accountable. They want to know that they speak up. If I speak up, I will live to see the next day. So this moment, painful as it is, could be the start of something more powerful.
We will keep taps on it and see where it goes. Wanjeri Nderu, anti-corruption and human rights activist, DW correspondent in Nairobi, Kenya, Andrew Waseke. Thank you very much to the both of you for contributing to this discussion.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
The story about the killing of Albert Ojwang will not go away anytime soon, even though police have removed five officers from active duty while the investigation is ongoing. The case has sparked anger at a tense moment for Kenya, which is marking a year since protests over tax rises and corruption triggered a police response that killed at least 60 people. Rights groups say dozens were illegally detained in the aftermath of last year's protests, with many still missing, and others have been arrested for mild criticism of the government and President William Ruto. However, the ongoing investigations provide a glimmer of hope for justice in this tragic situation. We'd like to hear from you on this, so please share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.